presenting, he's addressed the board before, and has some information he wants to share with John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you all for giving me an opportunity to speak to you again after the last time I was here in October. As most of you know, I represent Invenergy. I want to address first what we know so far about what happened last month with the turbine lines breaking. General Electric, the manufacturer, has been investigating the incident. We've been told, I heard today, you can't believe everything you read in the paper, actually, one thing the paper reported appears to be accurate. It was, according to GE's initial assessment, it was weather-related. You may recall that this happened about, I think it was either 3 or 4 days after the big storms. What I have not heard before, and hasn't been in the paper, is according to GD, this particular blade appears to have been struck several times by lightning. I want to explain what happens when something like this, and it's incredibly rare, but when something like this happens. Now, the reason there were two broken is we do know when the one broke, it hit a second one, and they both fell off. These machines are designed so that at the instant an upset condition occurs, something goes off, the machine shuts down. That did happen in this case, like it would happen in any case when there was an issue with the proper rotation of the turbine. The two turbine blades, as they're designed to do, fell straight down. A couple of people have asked me recently to describe what these things are like and try to compare them to helicopter blades. They are nothing like helicopter blades other than they both happen to turn. These blades weigh 10 tons each, 20,000 pounds apiece. The maximum rotation of one of these turbines is 15 RPM, 15 revolutions per minute. They are designed so in the unlikely event that they do break, they are designed to fall straight down, which is exactly what happened here. They are designed so that no piece of this, no piece that may break off could endanger anyone. I can tell you based on the analysis that's been done by both California Ridge and General Electric, and I actually sent Terry earlier today an aerial photo. It's going to be really hard to see this, but it's the only one I have. So if you can't see it, maybe sometime later, Terry can circulate it to all of you. But, and this was actually, what you see up here in the corner is actually another turbine blade. This picture was taken from the top of another turbine. And the major, the 99% of the blades are right down here at the very base of the turbine where they fell off. There are some little bits of pieces that were spread out. Most of that appears to have been windborne after they fell. The farthest little piece of fiberglass that was located was about 300 feet away. Tiny little piece of fiberglass. The very closest residence to this turbine is 1,663 feet away. At no time was anyone in danger. At no time was there any kind of a risk of any piece of this thing flying anywhere near anyone. I will report back to you once we receive a definitive analysis from General Electric, the other manufacturer. They are investigating it. That is what we know at this time. Now, are there any questions in there?
Is there a question from the board? From the board, please, on Mr. Blaser's account of the blade failure.
I have a question. How do you know if he's going after it hit the ground or before it hit the ground? You said it appeared that those pieces were blown after it hit the ground. How do you know? Are you looking at grass or dirt that's been moved by them?
Well, no, I'm not looking at it at all. I'm not in that paper. There are folks who went out there and examined all the pieces. As I understand it, they're doing something of a jigsaw puzzle study to determine exactly where the farthest piece may have come from any particular location on a blade. So the best estimate that I've been told so far is that they appear to have been windborne. But again, we're not talking about 20,000 pounds of blade. We're talking little bits of fiberglass. So the best guess at this point, because it's all I can give you, is those little bits of pieces must have been moving more because they're very light.
Did this contradict what it said earlier?
Yep.
Any other questions? Yeah. So, please.
So, how far from the base did this fall?
The big piece. I'm not worried
the
about
big the big pieces. Probably doesn't have to do for you. Just circulate this picture.
Well, but the picture won't tell me distance. It means,
well,
is it within 100 yards of it? Or?
No, it's right at the very bottom. It's right at the base. Straight down.
Okay. You
have a
so if you took the wind, no, I don't need to be all pressy. If you took the wind turbine that is closest to another person's property, would it have hit the other person's property?
No idea. Remember that the minimum setback by your ordinance is 1,200 feet.
1,000.
This wind farm had 1,000 feet.
The current ordinance is 1,200.
The current ordinance has 1,200.
This one was 1,000 feet.
This one was at 1,000. The farthest little bit that we had here was 300 feet away. So, nowhere near a residence.
And the big piece was
right at the very base of the
building. So, how long is it? How far is the furthest peak away from the base? Do you know that?
One little piece.
No. Of the major piece. I don't care.
The big piece
that fell.
Right.
The furthest length away from the base is how far?
Right at the bottom of the base.
That's 6 feet. Is that 100 feet? I'm
inches.
How long is it?
Oh, you mean in terms of the length?
Yeah.
Well, these blades are, I think, 46 or 47 meters long. So what you can see in this picture is one end of the blade, the broken blade, is up against the bottom of the turbine tower.
Okay, so you're saying 150 feet from the base is about the furthest piece of the base.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't understand your question.
All right. Are there any other questions?
Anyone else?
Okay, so let's go
with
it's Mr. Green.
Mr. Green? Yes. What is the tower, the support staff, support part itself damaged at all when the blade fell?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't seen any reports indicating any damage to the tower itself. I can't tell you that. Tank may not have been shipped to the very bottom where the influence blade landed, but I'm not aware of
that.
Are there plans to repair this windmill, or what are the plans for this windmill now?
That's what, well, first and foremost, we need to sit in the electrical to confirm their initial analysis. Once that happens and we get confirmation about what actually did happen, my assumption is, yeah, this one will be, they'll bring out the blades, repair whatever was broken, and put it back in condition.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Stevens.
Has there been any other inspections that take place for structures that may have been damaged during that time or since they have been constructed?
They're inspected, I don't want to say constantly, but each of these turbines, all of the, you know, the guys go up through the inside of the tower and inspect everything on the inside. So these are inspected regularly.
Including the blades?
Including the blades.
Okay.
I hate to say my assumption, I hope people don't assume. But as far as I know, a program of inspection was conducted after the storms, to make sure that there aren't any others that were affected by the storms. And as far as I know, because I haven't been told there are any others damaged, this was the only one. But in terms of routine inspection and maintenance, that happens on a very regular basis.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I don't want to bring from audience comments, but the comment you wanted me to ask was, if it's aluminum, how can it conduct? I mean, if it's fiberglass, how does it conduct that system?
Why was it hit by lightning?
I don't know. That's what GE is telling us. The failure was caused by weather-related events, specifically lightning strikes. They're the ones doing the inspection, and each individual wind turbine is inspected routinely for...
Absolutely.
When I come back, probably next month, what I'll do is, once I find out, I'll send an email to Bill Duffy.
Thank you very much for all of you.
Anything else on the blades there?
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, John? Mr. Alexander?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Blazek, you probably do not have the answer, but I would appreciate a written response concerning the emergency lights, the flashing strobes on the facilities, as to whether they were operational following the storm. And I don't expect an answer this evening, but would you be kind enough to respond to that, to Mr. Donahue, when it's possible for you to next year?
The aircraft lights after the storm?
Correct.
I will find out.
Thank you.
Okay. Other areas you want to address?
Number two is noise. I came here in October, told you that I hoped that our acoustic engineers, Hank Hart and Schomer, would be done sometime in November, and that I hope to be here in December to report some results. I did not want to come here today and report nothing other than we're done, but I'm still waiting. So over the last couple of weeks, I have pushed Mr. Hancart and Mr. Schomer to at least give me a preliminary report. They're not done. An enormous amount of information has been generated. You may recall when I was here at the beginning of October, we hadn't had enough information because we had had lousy wind. They have generated through October and into November an enormous amount of data. Enough for them to be able to ultimately generate a report, and they have in fact concluded, they've stopped monitoring. We have been accused by some that we took too long. We have been accused by others that we shouldn't have stopped yet. We took as long as it took. I want to remind all of you that we started 2 months late because we spent 2 months trying to get access to the properties of the two families that were the principal parties complaining to us, and we were not able to get access. But nevertheless, it took as long as it took. I'm not trying to be flippant about that. But I needed to make sure that the experts that we hired had enough information to give me an intelligent opinion about what's going on. First and foremost, whether or not we are violating any regulations. Secondly, whether we are or not, what is actually going on out there. I have the answer, at least initially, subject to a full report to come later, to that first question. I emailed today to Terry an initial draft report that I actually received today from Hancard, which has also been reviewed and approved by Mr. Schomer, with an initial report regarding whether or not these turbines are complying with the Illinois Pollution Control Board noise regulations or whether we are violating those regulations. And I want to mention one thing first, and then I'll get into what they told me. Since February, when we first began receiving complaints, and the complaints were all about how loud these turbines were. Today, while sitting here, is the first time that I have ever heard from either of the families that have been complaining about these turbines that we are now dealing not with high-frequency noise, but with low-frequency noise. I should add that because I've had an ongoing conversation and relationship with Mr. Hartke's attorney, that I had promised to him that if and when I did receive anything in writing from my experts, despite the fact that we're not yet in litigation, despite the fact that I had no obligation to do so, that I would give it to him. And I sent that I sent this report to him today at 2 o'clock. So I find it puzzling that after Mr. Hartke's attorney received a report from me, which, as you'll hear, confirms that we don't violate, so far, the Pollution Control Board noise regulations in terms of loudness, the complaint has now become, not that they're too loud, but the complaint complaints are about low frequency. Fortunately, this initial report addresses that as well. So let me explain, first of all, what the law is in Illinois about noise. It's based on regulations. Those regulations are propounded by the Illinois Pollution Control Board. That's part of their duty. And those regulations, first of all, separate property into three separate classes, A, B, and C. Generally speaking, there are literally dozens of subcategories within each of those. So generally speaking, A is residential, B is commercial industrial, C is agriculture. That's oversimplified, but that's enough for us for today. The law also is that even if a residence is on a C-class land, that being on farmland, the residence itself, not the entire property, but the residence itself, has to meet the A-class standards. So what I'm dealing with here are the Pollution Control Board regulations that address noise limits with respect to residential A-class property. That's incredibly important because the standards, the numerical limits, they're based on decibels, loudness levels. The levels are lower for A or residential property than they are for commercial, industrial, or agricultural. They are also lower for, there's two different standards that have to be met, daytime and nighttime. The nighttime standards are lower still than the daytime standards are, obviously because people sleep at night. So what I've had Hancock and Schomer focus on has been the nighttime A-class regulatory limits. Because if we comply with the nighttime limit, by definition, we're going to be comply with the daytime limit, because the daytime limit is much higher. So, and again, I want to caution you all, this is not the be-all, the end-all. This is me forcing two engineers who didn't want to do it to give me interim information so I can stand up here and at least tell you what we know so far, subject to them completing their analysis hopefully later this month. First, I want to address this low-frequency stuff. And again, this gives me a headache sometimes. Like I said, we've got A, B, and C, we've got daytime and nighttime. Within those, there are also nine octave bands, nine separate limits that we have to address, from low frequency to high frequency. So there is one definitive statement in here that I want to mention to you all, since we've heard for the first time today that we're dealing with all of a sudden low frequency noise. The measured turbine-only noise levels in the lower bands do not even approach their respective limits. We're nowhere near the limits of the low frequencies. So, of these nine levels, and again, I'm talking about just nighttime because, again, if we meet nighttime, there's no issue with the daytime. What they've been able to tell me so far is seven out of the nine, we are clearly within the limits. Two limits, 500 hertz and 1,000 hertz, they are currently at a 95% level of certainty that we are also below the limits. Mr. Hancard and Mr. Schomer tell me that by the time they're done crunching the numbers and analyzing all the data, and I want to remind you what this data is. And it's really two kinds of data that they have to analyze and compare. Number one, actual noise levels that were measured by meters, by sound meters that they had set up at various locations, other than at the two properties because we couldn't get access. And number two, specific operating conditions, both the operating conditions of each of the turbines and weather and any other conditions that may have been occurring each and every time we received a complaint. Every time we received a complaint, it would be forwarded to me from California Ridges operations folks. I would forward it to Hancock and Schomer. and they were, they would add that to their database as part of what they were analyzing to determine exactly what was happening every single time a complaint was received. And this doesn't just start in May when I first became involved. I was able to obtain every complaint that was received by California Ridge from February when we first started receiving complaints. So you can imagine the volume of data that they're in the process of analyzing. But with all that said, as I said, seven out of nine vans, we are absolutely within the Pollution Control Board regulatory limits. The remaining two, they are currently at a 95% level of certainty that we are. I was told that by the time they're done, they'll probably be, and you're going to see this report. I sent it to Terry to circulate to all of you. I've already given it to Mr. Harkey's attorney. If Mr. Miles is still here, I have a copy. I can give it to him as well. Hancock and Schomburg believe by the time they're done crunching the data, they will be at a 99% level of certainty. And I can tell you, in 31 years of dealing with expert witnesses, I've never had an expert give me an opinion within a 99% level of certainty. The 1% is nothing is absolutely guaranteed, but that's as close to a guarantee as I'm ever going to see. So that is what the information that we have as of now. I hope to have a full report by the time of your January meeting. I hope to be able to come back here and provide you all with that full report. We are not ignoring the claims. I can tell you, as part of my transmission today to Mr. Harkey's attorney, I also suggested that he and I talk again. We've met once before. We're trying to set up a meeting this week so we can meet again to talk about what the next steps may be. We're not ignoring it. We're doing everything we can as quickly as we can. But I can tell you, as of now, we are not in violation of either the Illinois Pollution Control Board regulations or your ordinance, which requires us to be in compliance with those regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Blaise. Are there questions from the board? Mr. Green, please.
Yes. Just because the numbers are within regulations doesn't necessarily mean that sound waves are not impacting people.
That is correct. That's part of what I'm hoping to find out by the time we get this final report. That's why I have the biggest part of the mission that I gave to these acoustic engineers was tell me what is going on exactly each time that we're receiving a complaint that people are hearing this, not low frequency because we never heard that before, but every time they're hearing noise from these turbines, tell me exactly what's going on so we can figure out why.
So should that mean that our state regulations need to be more strict and our ordinance needs to be more strict?
I'm not going to fully illustrate whether or not your ordinance could be more strict than what the state regulations are. My concern with the state regs is that they were written before the age of wind turbines. I can tell you candidly that there is a small group of acoustic folks who think they should be more stringent. There is a fairly large worldwide group of acoustic folks who don't. Mr. Green, I'm not an engineer. My first function is to determine whether or not my client is violating the law. That's the first thing I have to do. The second thing I have to do is take these complaints seriously and figure out what to do about it. I'm very close to figuring out the first one while at the same time trying to figure out the second. So I'm not trying to avoid your answer. I just don't have an answer for you right now. I don't know.
Well, I think that's where the solution to the problem is.
You may be right. I just don't know. All I can tell you right now is the law that stands to sets certain limits. And so far, at least, from the data that I'm seeing, we're within those limits.
Okay, other questions? Ms. King, that's
time. Is there anything that a director that you know of, anything to do with the low frequency at all, in any of the regulations, or any of
the 9-octave bands. They go all the way from I remember right, 3.15 is the low end, up to $8,000.
It will address the sulfurs.
Yes, yeah, like I said, there are, if you look at the regulation, if anybody is really interested, it's 35 Illinois Administrative Code 901.102. If I remember right. Yes. I have to look at my external brain and I can tell you this. Yes. 35 Illinois Administrative Code 901.102, which is entitled Sounds Emitted to Class A Land. And if you'd like, tomorrow morning or something, I can just email this material and make it circulate.
Thank you.
And what you'll see is it actually identifies the three classes of land. You can't see it too well here, but that's what it looks like. And it'll give you octave bands from as low as 31.5 all the way up to 8,000. Over here, if I go to the last column, class A land, that's the decibels. So at 31.5 on the 72, up at 8,000 on the 32. And 500 and 1,000, I'm at 51 and 45.
Okay. Let me interrupt you just a minute, Mr. Blazer. We have a couple of members of our board tonight that have other engagements. They've asked to be released from this commitment. And when that time comes, so if you see a couple board members getting up and leaving, it's because they have someplace else to be. It's not that they're going to the session. So, gentlemen, you have that time comes, so you're excused. Okay, are there other questions? Mr. Stone.
Yes, Mr. Blazer, I've got one other question, and that is, have there been other areas complained about high and low frequencies, noise pollution outside of this area that you know of?
This issue of low frequency, I've already called a couple of different things today, isn't it? If you, I suggest you Google the phrase wind turbine syndrome. And most of these people that you hear from very clearly have. What you'll find is that there is a group of people who have come to the opinion that there is something called wind turbine syndrome, this low frequency thing. There's something, I've read it referred to as something like seasickness. What you'll also find is that experts around the world, specifically the United States, England, Australia, there are probably other countries, but I'm familiar with reports from those three, have said it doesn't exist. So that's the best I can tell you right now. It is an issue out there, particularly the things I was hearing this evening, are things that are almost verbatim from things that you can read on the web. But I feel free to Google it. That's a wonderful thing. You can learn a lot.
Mr. Alexander.
Mr. Blazer, I have two questions. One was along the lines of similar to Mr. Stone. I know it's virtually impossible, I think, to compare, but is there any data that you have that can be shared about our wind turbine levels and any tests done in Venergy's other wind farms concerning their problems or any other tests similar to this? So I asked that question, not for an answer tonight, but for you to research that.
Could you walk me through that one?
Yeah, I think I lost you. It's a situation where I'm wondering if our wind turbines still comply, but they're noisier than anything else.
The 16100, well, the ones we're dealing with here are the 16100s.
Right.
I can tell you they're not. Then I can answer that question right now.
Okay. And again, you get into the situation, the larger the smaller turbines are going to create different levels.
They're going to create different levels and different frequencies.
That may not be a good question.
Well, it's a very fair question, but that one I happen to know the answer to. And the answer is no, they're not. I will tell you this, the larger they are, the less wind they need, and generally the lower the rotations speed has to be to generate the power that they need.
And I've read that as well.
Right. So, frankly, it was historically the smaller ones that spun faster that generated higher noise levels. The bigger they get, actually, the quieter they are.
Yeah. And I've also read varying opinions concerning other atmospheric conditions, concerning whether that noise is amplified, et cetera. And so the location could have some bearing on it.
It could. And that's one of the, I hate to call them benefits, because it's not, but it's one of the benefits of the duration of this study. It allowed Hancock and Schomer to take into account a pretty broad spectrum of conditions, not just atmospheric, temperature, before, during, and after harvesting. One of the things they have to do here is background noise. So what they were finding, for example, is, and there's a reference to that in this interim report, that there was an uptick during harvest time in October, November. Now they were running faster, but one of the problems that may have occurred is combination of sources. When you put two noise sources together, they generate what may appear to be louder noise. That's part of what the ultimate report will tell us, because they have to back out all of those other, what they call background noise sources, so they can focus exclusively on how much noise is being generated by these, particularly these two turbines that are the source of complaints.
Thanks. Sure. Second question concerns just a question of understanding. So at no time during these tests did any of those 9 octaves exceed the acceptable level. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, to 7 bands, 95% certainty with respect to the other two.
All right. So you're saying that, let's say that plays out, that there is never a time during the testing period that those bands were exceeded as far as the EPA specification.
Assuming the final report confirms this, the answer is yes.
So this isn't an average. This is not to exceed and never did.
Not to exceed and never did.
Thank you.
Mr. Rush. I think the report talked about the decibel level. In my understanding, my science holds correctly that sound is measured by the number of decibels.
Correct.
Okay, and you're talking about frequencies and octave levels.
Right. Let me try to, again, you probably can't see this thing. This is the regulation that I was talking about.
Right.
All right. So over here on my right and your left are the different octave bands that have to be measured for, mm-hmm. 9 of them. Over here on the left, under Class A land, are the decibel levels that apply to each of the limits. In decibels that apply to each of those octave bands. So it is by decibel. The ultimate measurement is, in terms of how loud is this and exceeding the limit, that limit is a numerical decibel limit.
And we're going down as far into the frequency level on octaves as would be something that would be inaudible to the human ear. But yet,
That one I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So around 30 or 32. It's 31.5 out of the low.
I'm sure it's based on that.
So in conjunction with what Mr. Jacob said, you've already delved down as far as you can go into the octave or the frequency band, as low octave as you go, even farther below than what a human ear can pick up or experience.
I want to caution you, I'm not an acoustic engineer, nor do I play one on TV, but what I'm telling you is if Mr. Greer is correct and 31.5 is inaudible, that's the low frequency, that's the bottom number that we have to test for pursuant to the Illinois regulations, all the way from 31.5 at the low end up to a screaming 8,000 at the high end.
Other questions from the board for Mr. Glazer? Mr. Miller, please.
Actually, I just have a comment. I've been here for a year now,
He said, you haven't heard anybody talk about low frequencies, but I can tell you, I've heard this to hearts of other people, major low frequency multiple times throughout their comments, and, you know, their time that they spend behind the podium. This isn't the first time I've heard of low frequency.
All I can suggest, Mr. Miller, is I have reviewed, I don't want to categorize the number, dozens, easily dozens, if not hundreds, of emails from, at any given point, Mr. or Mrs. Hartke, or Mr. or Mrs. Miles, from February through a couple of days ago. Well, frequency was never mentioned twice.
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I think it doesn't matter. I've heard him talk about a little frequency.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Other questions? Mr. H. J. Wright?
Mr. Blazer, I mean, really when it comes down to it, to me, I mean, I know these people can't just be making it all up. I mean, but...
I don't think so either.
But what I have to say is when I think about it, if it was for myself, just the unsightliness of it, and if they didn't have anything to gain from it when they got put up, I mean, there has to be something where they can be bought out or something, because why would... I mean, you have rules and regulations in town on things like trailers and things like that, and what it's doing is just protecting your value of your home. And I'm not saying anything bad about trailers. I'm just saying that there's got to be rules and regulations. I mean, you go out there, and if you sit on the back of some of these people's porches, and I have friends that are in this area, I mean, just to look at red blinking lights over and over and over, my brother moved from somewhere, and all he could see was the lights that bothered him. So, I mean... I mean, what are we really talking about? Are we really here just for the noise, or are we here for the unsightliness, the loss of value? I mean, have you did any studies on the loss of value?
No, I'm not.
I mean, is someone going to do that? Because, I mean, there has to be a study. I would think that you shouldn't be able to lose 50-60%, and I have not talked to anybody about this. I'm just looking at it. I mean, if I'm actually involved in this, and I just started, I don't know if you know that, but if I'm actually involved in this and my name is attached to this, I didn't vote on anything. I didn't vote for them to be there. If somebody was to ask me, would you vote yes to put those up with residents that have to actually look at it and actually have their kids be subject to it, I would say no. But I think when it comes down to it, really what your company is worried about would be the dollar figure. And I understand that because you're comfortable. That's what you're there for.
I disagree.
But I think that you should actually take into effect, and you should actually take into account the part about what is the dollar figure. What did they lose? They had nothing to gain, but they definitely lost something. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. What we'll focus on tonight is the noise issue and the noise property values. So is there other questions?
I would like to say something.
Okay, it's fine.
I'm accused sometimes of saying too much, but that's why I'm going to do this. That's my job. Mr. Wright? These issues are going to be resolved one of two ways. Either we're going to resolve it with the Miles and Harkey families before they sue us, or we're going to get it resolved after they sue us. Do I believe they're going to sue us? Regardless of what the results are, I believe we will be sued. I will then be dealing with them in different contexts, but lawsuits get resolved all the time. One way or another, these claims are going to be resolved, either by us voluntarily or by a judge. But they will be resolved. Do those resolutions potentially include lost property value? I've been doing environmental work for 20 years. I'm very familiar with claims by people who are near or potentially near landfills and transfer stations who claim loss of property value. That is a common request. If it's provable, so Sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. I don't want to be flippant about this, but you need to understand, not to me, I want to respond to your question whether I have to or not, because I think it's a fair question from someone who wasn't involved in the decision to approve these turbines to begin with. This is going to be resolved completely, one way or the other. I'm not in a position to resolve it now because I don't know enough. But part of the reason why I, earlier today at 2 o'clock, I sent Jim Thompson, he's the attorney for Mr. Hershey. Part of the reason I sent Jim this report was to continue the dialogue that he and I have had. Because neither he nor I want to get involved in litigation. We still want to try and work it out. Despite what's been said, we still want to try and work it out. I have every intention of continuing to try and work it out. At the end of the day, it may not be up to us. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, are there other questions from the board?
Well, he really didn't answer my question. I just want, my question was, do you think personally, do you think that the value is lost on the house?
No, I do not.
Buy a house, try and
get it for you.
If there are no other questions, I'm just pleased to thank you for coming.
22% on average. What is it? 22%
according to the report. And if you want to keep forward the information, I would talk about the areas of the rest.
I'll try to do it. I'll tomorrow.
Thank you very much.